Yes, get ready to hear Passion Unleashed from a man who reaches millions worldwide with his TV series, The Wildlife of Tim Faulkner. But he's passionately local in his mission. Tim Faulkner has just been named Conservationist of the Year by the Australian Geographic Society. He's General Manager of the Australian Reptile Park, amongst countless other roles. He also manages the Devil Ark Project, an effort to save the Tasmanian devil population from what looks like impending extinction. The Tassie devil's population has declined by 96% over the past 20 years, 96%. He knows more than most about Australia's native animals, but a recent trip, his first overseas, in fact, triggered a profound realisation for him, and it might for you too. Tim joined me a little earlier from our ABC Central Coast studio in New South Wales, which is not far from his Australian Reptile Park, which you can see on the hill if you've ever driven along the Princes Highway that way, and I welcomed him to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations. What a gong.
Oh, thank you. I'm very proud. Not quite as proud as I think my parents are, but very special.
You've had some wild adventures in your time. Your TV show reaches a mega global audience, and yet you've just been overseas for the very first time this year in your life. What epiphany did that trigger in you? Where'd you go?
I went to Borneo, Malaysian Borneo, and I'm very well travelled in Australia. I just could never find a good enough reason to go overseas because there was always somewhere here that I hadn't been. I couldn't draw myself away, but I had an itch that needed scratching and I went to Borneo. I had an amazing time, a wonderful place, very good people, wildlife, just spectacular. But the epiphany was that reflecting upon Australia, I couldn't figure out how in this country, an impoverished country of Borneo, that I'd heard only negative stories of palm oil, deforestation, disappearing wildlife, poaching. I saw the closest thing I'd ever see to megafauna, pygmy jungle elephants, large species of cat, great apes, 199 species of bird, reptiles of every description, 35 species of mammal.
Mm. Describe some of those encounters for us.
Oh, well, I mean, the pygmy jungle elephants were, I was at Sukau on the Kingabatan River, and it's just my wife and I with a guide in a small little motorised boat. I've never been overseas, yes, so I've not seen elephants on the African savannas, and we hear elephants trumpeting, but the forest is so dense that it comes all the way to the edge of the river. Mm. And so we're sort of, motoring along very slowly by ourselves, middle of nowhere, and you start and get glimpses of colour through the forest, but it's not until the elephants are 30 metres away that you can see them as they break the vegetation. And then the first encounter was 30 elephants come down to the edge of the river and swim across it in front of us. It was spectacular. And, and albeit 300 metres from that, there's an orangutan up a tree just with a mouthful, gums full of fruit, figs, just chomping away and... Mm. It was 35 mammals, most of which were daytime encounters, from shrews, badgers, otters, civets, primates, just unbelievable.
So it was awesome.
It was awesome.
And you expected something very different.
Well, I expected for it to be tough. Australia is harsh, and whilst I've been lucky enough to see so much wildlife here, you're normally putting in the effort for one species, just to have an encounter or to know that it's near you. Whereas there, I know we were on with a guide that had local information, but all the same, I'm local here and I can't see 35 species of mammal in a couple of days. It's just not possible. And still, the megafauna of clouded leopards and orangutans and jungle elephants and just incredible.
So you would expect to come back feeling excited by that awesome, spectacular adventure and those encounters, and in fact you came back feeling sad in some way.
I did. I felt sad there, to tell you the truth. I had a great time, I must admit. It was just, when my mind wanders at night, that reflection to, how on earth today did I see a diurnal squirrel, a diurnal civet, a diurnal badger, a species of otter, four primates, particularly the mammals is where it hit home the hardest. How on earth did I do that And, you know, our land down under that's meant to be intact, remote, robust, pristine. Mm. You go to the hot spots for our wildlife and you still can't find them. And I don't think that's a credit to their ability to hide as much as they're genuinely rare and disappearing by the day. And so that reflection really hit home. And the numbers that drew, I'm learning along the way that, you know, there's 30,000 orangutans in the wild. And people say that with a last gasp. And I think, but hold on. There's only 10,000 devils. There's less than 1,000 numbats, bilbies, northern hairy-nosed wombats, orange-bellied parrots, swift parrots, and the list goes on. And I couldn't compute that.
There was a paradox for you. Your sense is that Australians get behind campaigns to save some of those superstar species overseas, like orangutans, but those unique species here on this continent don't get public attention in the way that they should.
Yeah, spot on. And that's not a criticism on the Australian public either. I think we are, you know, shown keystone species. And we do support and get behind. And we see our wildlife as our identity, national, cultural identity, and we really do get behind it. And, I mean, if I showcase in a TV program a little obscure, you know, Western Australian marsupial, people are amazed. You know, I didn't even know that existed. And that there is the point that we know our iconic species, but we're not exposed enough to our obscure species, which often are the ones that are right about to fall off the face of the earth.
Tim Faulkner is with us on Life Matters this morning. He is the winner of the Australian Geographic Society's Conservationist of the Year Award. And a recent trip to Borneo has really galvanised his sense of the plight of Australian species. I mean, you've been working with wildlife since you were just 14. And we'll get to the Tassie Devil. But you hold ambassador roles in initiatives for koalas, quokkas, dingoes. You're general manager of the Australian Reptile Park, a very particular private zoo focused on reptiles. And so this trip's really kind of refocused your local efforts in some way.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, I've always had the local ambitions, and it just reaffirmed them that they really do need our help. Some of our species are in such bad states that when you hear there's 10,000 of a species left, you sort of think it's a good thing. But it's not. And what a stark realisation when you hear that there's 30,000 of a species like orangutan left in the wild. It really rams home. We're clutching at straws saying our numbat population has just hit 1,000. That's not good.
The Tassie Devil has been a big focus for you. Why?
Oh, you know, half intentional and half by, you know, accident and capitalising on opportunities that were there. You know, remember seeing illustrations and stories on Tasmanian devils as a kid, you know, family readings at home of Australian Geographics. And then I started work at a wildlife organisation at 14 and a half. Mm. And one of the species there that grabbed my attention were devils. And they did that because of their personalities. They're very unique. They're all individuals, different personalities, different characters. And once you've worked with animals for a few years, that type species is very stimulating because it's different every day. Every individual is different, and so it's very rewarding. And then the disease came along 1996, and by 2003, regional zoo bodies were talking about insurance populations, and the reptile park was in there in the first instance. 2006, we received the first insurance population devils to come to mainland. And the rest is history, essentially.
So you've set up the Devil Ark Project, and the disease that's killing the Tassie devils, of course, is that horrific facial tumour disease. You've been a strong advocate for the reintroduction of the Tassie devil onto mainland Australia. Not everyone agrees with you. What's your rationale?
Well, my rationale is a simple one, and that's shared of the Reptile Park and Devil Ark's rationale, and that is that there is an academic, Australian ecologist, consistent view that this could be good for Australian ecology. In the absence of top-order predators like dingoes that have been forcibly removed and eradicated, to my dismay, fox and cats are continuing to ravage our wildlife. So realistically, you know, we do this conservation work because we believe in it and we love it. And when extra opportunities pop up on top of what we're already doing for the devil and the Save the Devil program, we want in. It's a no-brainer. An innovative science and a trial reintroduction to mainland of sterilised devils means, you know, they can't get out of control in the first instance. Hopefully there's a point at which we want them to get out of control. But we want in. We want bang for buck. And we believe in innovative science. And anything that could be and prospectively is good for Australian wildlife and ecology, we want in.
Interesting. So we could see Tassie devils roaming our, you know, byways and highways.
Well, let's hope so. And, I mean, the Tasmanian initiatives that are being undertaken for securing the devil in the wild in Tasmania, fundamentally important. Devil Ark has 165 devils as we speak today, 25 of which are returning to Tasmania to the Tasman Peninsula on the 18th of this month. So we're really supportive of the Tasmanian initiatives, but we believe there's more that can be done. And, you know, the mainland ecologists and Tasmanian ecologists that are supportive of the ideal of devils returning to mainland, they're the best and brightest, have spent their lives studying Australian ecology and have watched our small mammals in particular disappear.
Just to get a sense, though, of how that would work, that introducing Tassie devils, sterilised Tassie devils into mainland Australia, what's the mechanism by which they become a predator? Do they attack the cats and foxes?
Sure.
Do they control the offspring of feral animals? Describe how you would see it working.
Yeah, I can only give you that in my opinion because it is hypothetical, I guess. You know, there are examples like when wolves were returned to Yellowstone National Park in the States. Controversial, met with a lot of reservations initially, now hailed as one of the world's greatest reintroductions. There's a brilliant little video called How the Wolves Changed the Water. And the wolves predating on large ungulates had an effect on the rivers and flora around it, in turn having a byproduct effect on fish and aquatic life. And you look at dingoes in Australia, you know, it's common fact now where there are dingoes, there are fewer foxes and cats. And dingoes work in packs. They take down things like emus, kangaroos, large herbivores and graziers. Mm. So the by-effect is that they protect the critical weight range fauna 5 kilos or under. Now, devils, fair to say, they're not good predators. They're a 44-gallon drum with short little legs. They're bush cleaners. They don't have impacts on agriculture. We should be able to get along with them better than some people have dingoes. So the effect that they could have on fox and cats is, I think that if a fox, cat and devil come face to face, there'll be an uneasy truce. I think the fox might be quicker, but the devil is stronger, and I don't think there'll be predation of those ferals by devils. However, devils, as marsupials, carry their young in a pouch through the vulnerable times, whereas fox and cats den their pups and kittens from day one, and they stink. So devils, hypothetically, can sniff them out very easily and predate their young and in turn have an effect. And it's no coincidence, in my opinion, that in Tasmania, something is still going very right until recent years, in that the mainland, we've lost, extinct, the eastern quoll. It's common, was common in Tasmania. Eastern barred bandicoot, extinct on mainland, still in Tasmania. Brush-tailed bedong, extinct on mainland, still present in Tasmania. Mm-hmm. Something's going right there. They say that foxes were introduced to Tasmania, but they've never been able to establish. Well, guess why? And cats have always been kept in check and never got to numbers that we see on mainland. Guess why?
You think it's the Tassie devil's work?
A lot of people think it's the Tassie devil's work. It's a very, very rational explanation. And so if we can have a little bit of that here on the mainland and improve our ecology and also bolster devil numbers, there's only 10,000 left disappearing by the day. Let's do it.
Yeah, so you're doing it with the Devil Ark Project. Before I come to that, your main opposition, in fact, to this proposal apparently is from the Tassie government. Why have they put up such strong resistance, do you think?
It's realistically the only opposition. And the resistance, look, they see the devil as state identity and value. You know, there's a fair bit of parochialism there. And, you know, it's also good because when someone, a state, for example, cares so much about a species, it would hopefully mean that we're not going to lose them as well. So I do credit that. But their foresight is that at present it might detract from current initiatives. And, you know, our worry is that an awful lot of money has been spent on devils. We're 20 years later.
And they're still dying.
They're still dying. You know, that needs to broaden itself and look for greater opportunities. So I think that time, you know, as I say, the best and brightest Australian ecologists are all in favour. And it'll just take time before, you know, they come around.
So the Devil Ark Project that you're running is a large-scale conservation breeding facility for Tassie Devils there in the beautiful Barrington Tops of New South Wales. That's a radical effort in many ways, isn't it? And I'm wondering how you ensure that population of Tassie Devils will be protected from the facial tumour disease.
Yeah, Devil Ark came about. John and Robin Weigel, who are owner-directors of Reptile Park and Devil Ark, they were heavily invested in Tassie Devils. And the Reptile Park, be it a medium-sized zoological organisation, by 2009 we had 50 devils. It was more than any other organisation on mainland Australia, and we're a private. And it became apparent that devils are still disappearing in the wild. These devils in zoos cost a lot of money because you're managing one devil at a time, about $10,000 an average per devil. Do that by 500 devils in the population over 20 years, and the costs are extraordinary. And regionally, the zoos were almost full, and the insurance population full at 300 devils. Not enough. It's a numbers game. If we're to preserve 95% of the existing genetic variation of the species over 30 years, more is better. So we needed cost efficiency, greater numbers, and devils that weren't losing their behavioural traits because of interaction with people so often. So we had the idea to go in search of land. We put advertisements out in the land newspaper and anyway, got a brilliant property in the Barrington Tops, 500 hectares, largely intact, just north of the World Heritage Area. And thus far we've fenced in 25 hectares, around about 15 enclosures. To give you an idea of the scale, the smallest is 3 hectares, 6 football fields in size, heavily vegetated.
So they're roaming free.
They're roaming free, and that's why they're now suitable for wild harvest, to return to wild, because they haven't turned into Staffordshire Terriers like Devils can in zoos. They're wild and very healthy, and the cost efficiency of managing them large scale like that, at no compromise to mental health or physical health, in fact enhancement, we get away now $1,500 per devil per year. A bang for buck over a 20 to 30 year period, that's the type of viability that's needed. So cost efficiency, behavioural integrity, and numbers. We're 165 devils, that's 30% of all devils existing within captivity. It's a very impressive feat.
Wow, but you're not allowed to release them yet.
No, we are returning to Tasmania, as I say, on the 18th of this month. But at the minute, we're in a holding pattern of ensuring. I mean, remember, it's not just us building numbers so we've got more devils. The ideal of the program is that there's X amount of genetic variation of the species. We need to retain that in captivity. Now, if you've only got few devils, you will lose that because you're not able to breed enough to retain it. So the more means better retention of the genetic variation, and that's why we need thousands of devils, not hundreds.
For you, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Long-distance runners, not sprinters. You said it.
And the thing is, you've just got to keep that facial tumour disease off the mainland, and that is the challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge. However, I think that the Tasmanians there have done a wonderful job of that. It's sad what I'm about to say, but the disease is incredibly aggressive. From contraction, 3 months it expresses itself, 6 months they're always dead. So quarantining of devils, of founders that have come in from the wild, it's a reasonably easy process because the disease is so aggressive. So by the time the devils come to mainland, they're not plucked from the bush and sent up to mainland. There are strict protocols that are undertaken, and there's been hundreds of devils that have come to the mainland, never a case of DFTD. So it's quite manageable in that perspective.
In fact, though, I didn't know this, but devils were once native on the mainland only a few thousand years ago, and that's just a drop in the ocean in evolutionary time.
It's a blink, that's right.
I mean, why do we know why they went extinct on the mainland in the first place?
No, and again, I'm regurgitating information here, but it's down to, it seems to me, most practically one of three things, and that was Aboriginal pressure. Probably not, because the Aboriginals have been here a long time pre-devils disappearing. Mm. The pressure of dingoes that arrived 5,000 years ago through northern Australia and made their way down. No coincidence, the Bass Strait filled with water 12,000 years ago, so dingoes never got to Tasmania. And number three is climate change. But devils had been here for a long time through many environmental changes, from deserts to ice ages, etc. So, not sure. Perhaps the dingo was a factor there. But, 1 to 5,000 years ago, they were here, as you said, an ecological blink in time. That's why talking about a devil reintroduction to mainland, it's a reintroduction. We're not talking about an introduction of a fox, toad, pig, buffalo, donkey, cat. This is a native species that was here not so long ago and fits in with our ecology.
You'd hope so, but it's still an experiment. And just finally, back to, I guess, the original premise of this discussion, how do you get people to care? Because they're going about their busy days and those little creatures around them, well, we're oblivious in the moment.
Yep, inherently I think that people do care, and I think that about our iconic wildlife, Australians care very much. We're just not exposed to the obscure species that often need most help. So I'll give you an example with the devils. We took devils up to the Barrington Tops, you know, and it's in agricultural country. Funny examples were before the devils were on site at Devil Arc through building, a fella at the pub tells me, "I saw devil footprints in the creek today." I said, "Well, that's funny because they're not here yet." Mm.
It's in their imagination.
That's right. But people that had some fears and reservations, you know, the agricultural community like that, they do their homework and they realise that something like a devil, hold on, so they don't pose a threat to agriculture in Tasmania. They're not, eating small children while they sleep. And now we've got community in the North Barrington's from Scone, Gloucester and across that are in love with the devil. They're its greatest advocates. And you know, what a transition in a 2 to 3 year period. I think that's the point, is if we can educate people and make prominent, more obscure, less iconic species, they fall in love with it. It's just that species needs the exposure.
Yeah, and hopefully not just the really cute species that we can teach our children about, you know, some of those, I don't know, like that amazing albino marsupial mole that lives underground, and, you know, some of those little creatures that are less sexy.
Yeah, certainly, and if, you know, my little TV program, it's only filmed in Australia, and it showcases a lot of Australian mammals. Now, the catch with them is they're really difficult to film, but you get to meet wonderful people that are often in projects that are trapping, monitoring, and, you know, the people you meet and the backstories of those species are the real deal. They're on the coalface. They love what they're doing. And, you know, you have a look at those programs and they showcase obscure Australian wildlife, whether it's amphibians, seabirds, mammals, marsupials, reptiles. It's tough and tricky when you're not filming a lion, a tiger or a bear, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Ah, you're passionate. And congratulations on winning Conservationist of the Year. I can see why. Thank you, Tim, for joining us on Life Matters today.
My pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
Tim Faulkner, General Manager of the Australian Reptile Park, and the 2015 Conservationist of the Year, as announced by the Australian Geographic Society. And what do you reckon? If you're in Tassie, do you think Tassie devils should be released on the mainland? If you're on the mainland, do you think Tassie devils should be bred and released widely? And interesting case that he makes. So, love to hear from you on our Facebook page, or you can email us from our website, abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. Up next, everyday economics. Are you ready for an increase in GST? Is it on its way?